A native of El Paso, Carlos Nicolás Flores is the author of a young adult novel, Our House on Hueco, and he is the director of the Teatro Chicano de Laredo and a former director of the South Texas Writing Project. He has long been engaged in the promotion of new writers and writing about the Mexican-American experience. He teaches English at Laredo Community College in Laredo, Texas, and his new novel, Sex as a Political Condition, is recently out with Texas Tech University Press. Carlos Flores, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
So, Sex as a Political Condition, a border novel. This novel, I know because I've known you for a few years, has been in the work for many, many years. Tell us about the process. Give us the whole narrative of this novel.
Well, actually, it began, I guess, somewhere, I don't know exactly, you know, maybe 20 years ago when I wrote my first chapter, Sex as a Political Condition, in the West Texas Writing Project there at UTEP.
At UTEP, really? Uh-huh.
Under the direction of Dr. Evelyn Posey, my wife, Lucinda Baroque, one of my colleagues, and I went there to train during the Summer Institute of the West Texas Writing Project to become directors of what eventually became the South Texas Writing Project in Laredo, whose purpose was to try to promote the improvement of the teaching of composition in English to our students. And so that's when I wrote it. It was primarily a joke. My wife and I and Lucinda got into a squabble over, I don't know, some feminist issue, and they really upset me. And then Evelyn, Dr. Posey, then says, listen, you need to write an original. I already had a bunch of other projects on the line that I was working on. And she said, no, you have to do something absolutely new. And so one day I was sitting there reading this collection of poetry by Latin American writers, and I came across this poem by Roca Dalton, mm-hmm. Toward a Greater Love, and I read it, and then boom, that's when the whole idea began. And I said, well, I'll just have fun, I'll joke around, and blah, blah, and so then I wrote it. And it came as a huge surprise, and then it lay dormant for years, until I went to Cuba in year 2000, and that's when you and I met.
Yes, we were we were part of that writing project, a writer's exchange of seven fiction writers from the U.S. and seven from Cuba, and we did workshops together with Christina Garcia.
Wow,
and
that's great.
That's where Carlos, you turned in chapters of that to the workshop.
It was that chapter that I submitted to Tom Miller, the director, and it was on the basis of that submission that he led me into the workshop. And then, of course, it was a workshop by Christina and you and everybody else. And then it was during it was one day that I borrowed Tom's computer, and we were staying in that hotel, which was just done from the Malecón there in Havana. Mm. And I didn't go to that workshop that day. And, in fact, you and I did a tour of the town that evening. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I remember, yeah. We took pictures. You brought your camera. We took pictures in front of old cars and in front of a street named Chacon. There's a street in Havana called Chacon. Carlos got a picture of me on
it. Is there a street car named Chacon?
It should be.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
It was that day then that the second chapter, The Tin Men, And then the entire novel just evolved. I mean, it just exploded, and I saw it all. And then I came back, and I wrote it, one of the early drafts, and then I submitted to the Chicano Latino Literary Prize in California. I think it's Riverside. I forget exactly.
Yeah, it used to be UC Irvine, but unfortunately they don't have that prize anymore. You remember that prize.
Irvine, right.
Andres Montoya won that prize.
Yeah, a lot of good writers have started with that
prize. Yeah, his book came out because of that prize. And man, I was certain that someday I would win that prize, and now, damn it, they don't even have it.
And so I won third place. Interestingly enough, thank God I won third place, because when I got it back, I saw that it needed just so much work.
Mm-hmm.
I was desperate to get published. So instead, I just shelved it, and I said, "Well, I'm never going to write this. I'm never going to finish it." So instead, I wrote Our House on Hueco, and then, of course, that got me in. That got me published. And once you get that first book published, well, then the door is open for a lot of other things.
Our House on Hueco. That's referring to Hueco Street here in El Paso, Texas, isn't it?
Right. That's where it takes place. It takes place on that street.
Interesting.
Right, because you're from here. You are an El Paso native, although it's been probably years since you've lived here, right?
Right. Yeah, over 40-something years. I left El Paso in 1970.
So you've been riding it for years and years. And then I remember a couple of years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, I was doing a reading in Laredo, and you took me to lunch. And you were talking about the possibility of self-publishing, but you didn't do that. Tell us what happened after that point.
Well, the thing is this, you know, after I won third place in the in that contest, I realized I went back over it. After I got Our House on Waco, I realized, okay, now it's time to go back to this manuscript. And so I looked at it, and then I did an evaluation of it, and I said, man, you need to do a lot of research, and which I began to do. And then I started to rewrite. And at that point, I had serious doubts about whether or not this book was going to be published because of all the bathroom humor,
right,
because of all the crudities, as one reviewer has said, and blah, blah, blah,
right,
you know, and the violation of a lot of expectations set by or created by political correctness. And
I said, I don't think
Texas Tech is going to publish this thing. You know, I doubt it. So that's why I was thinking about publishing it myself, because I know how things work. I mean, if you write a fairly decent book, I mean, and you just get it out, eventually, you know, wind will pick it up, you know, somewhere in the publishing industry and take it somewhere. So I was ready to do that because I was desperate to get it out. But no, listen, I submitted it to it, and the key person that made a difference, who read it the day he received it, is Dr. Robert Mandel, former director of the press. And mm-hmm. he sent me the email the next day, and he says, I'm interested. And that was
wow.
it.
Yeah, that was one of the things that first struck me when I opened your book, was that it was, I didn't realize it was published by Texas Tech's Medica series, which one of my own books was published by early on.
Yes, I know that. And by the way, Dr. Mandel spoke very highly of your book.
Oh, yeah. They were wonderful. They were just great support, very supportive of the book. But, you know, that's really what struck me was, before I had even read the book, I had checked out Ilan Stavans' quote where he says, roll over PC police. You know, he calls it righteous narrative, and you know, he goes on and on to talk about the style and approach of your book and your narrative. And it made sense to me why Texas Tech would have published it, because especially in that series, you know, I think that Robert Mandel, who is really a visionary, and even his editor at the time, Irene Villar, you know, both sort of got the America series going there. One of the things that struck me about that series specifically is that they took chances. They took risks, bold risks on books that nobody else, or I shouldn't say nobody else, but certainly most publishers today would shy away from or not want to publish, and they take those risks to publish those narratives.
You know, when Robert couldn't find readers for my book, I mean, eventually he found them, but, you know, he couldn't find them. He says, I don't understand this. I submitted this book everywhere, and no one wants to read it
right,
or review it. And so, yeah, I know that. And then later on I found out, I didn't know who Robert Mandel was. I haven't met him. I've spoken to him a few times. Later, now that he's back in Connecticut, he's launched this new publishing house,
yeah,
or established his publishing house.
Right.
I found out, man, this guy is no wonder he liked the book. No wonder he was capable of understanding a book like mine. You're right. He's a visionary. He's a visionary rooted in the Mexican American or Latin American reality.
Right. Absolutely. One of the other things in terms of what Ilan Stavans says about your book is he actually, and I kind of want to expand on this a little bit further because you touched on it. You know, he says that the book's a narrative where we are all turned into stereotypes, and reality is a store of tourist souvenirs. And I really found that a very accurate description of the style and approach to the book. But I would add, too, to that, you know, that the men who populate this book, and I think you alluded to this earlier, the men who populate this distinct world that you're writing about are unapologetically macho. You know, they objectify women throughout. And there's all kinds of, like you said, crude language, crude sort of situations. What kind of flack have you gotten for these characters? I mean, have you had to deal with that already?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
I'm not going to go into what's happened, for example, in my immediate circles, you know, some women who have reacted very negatively, but because I promised I wouldn't drag them into this conversation. However, their views of the book have been echoed by two reviewers, one out of Texas Observer and the other one from Literary Life, you know, and both of them, I mean, took big issue with the with the portrayal of the women.
Mm-hmm.
However, I must add something. I think in many instances, they really have not understood the book entirely, because the bathroom humor has multiple purposes. Let me quote another young woman, very literate, very well-informed, Hispanic writer herself, who says, you know, if it weren't for the bathroom humor, this would be a tragedy. You know, no one would want to read it if it weren't for the bathroom humor. So in many ways, the bathroom humor cushions the real ugliness at the heart of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's interesting.
You know, that's one thing that a lot of people are missing, and so they're getting caught up on the fact that, you know, this one reviewer listed, I can just imagine her, when she's doing the review, listing every single metaphor that I use to describe women's breasts.
Yeah,
I know.
I think I read that
a long list.
The end of the book.
Yeah, that would be a long list.
How did she do that? Did she actually take notes? Because I didn't. And then I was very impressed by the fact that I was pretty good at metaphors.
We're talking to Carlos Flores. His new novel, Sex as a Political Condition, a border novel, just came out with Texas Tech Press. Carlos, one of the things that we learn when we have a book, and I know you, when Waco came out, you came to El Paso and you did some readings and you were doing readings all over. What are your plans on promoting this book, especially vis-a-vis the reaction that it's getting from a lot of the community? What are your plans?
I have a number of friends and colleagues that are getting ready to invite me to do readings and talks, at different institutions or schools, right now throughout Texas and eventually in the Northwest, up in Pennsylvania.
Sure.
And right now, I have a very heavy reading load. I'm writing a new book. I'm also traveling. I just got back from Europe. And then I'm teaching full time, here at the school to finance all of that. And so right now it depends on who's interested in inviting me and whether or not we can work something out. So, it's I'm not going to do it. Last time it was very intense, and I don't know if it made any difference, in the sales. So right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to, I have a website. I have a webmaster who's helping me promote the group, through all the different social media.
Right.
So I'm going to concentrate on that as well. So, I have plans. It depends. I'd like to come to El Paso, for example, I don't know if anybody would be interested in, helping me in my coming there.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. One of the things as I was reading the book, there's a certain kind of a tone that you strike that reminded me actually of when I first read Oscar Seth Acosta's Revolt of the Cockroach People, And what I mean by that is, there are some scenarios as well, where activism, sort of politics, there's an intersection of that. And you kind of show behind the scenes, almost reality of those worlds, the drugs, the paranoia that looms in those kinds of circles. And I know that you yourself have been an activist for many years. And I'm wondering, how does just your general activism play a role in this book specifically?
Well, I'm going to give you one example. First of all, in 1987, there was a convoy to Nicaragua that came to Laredo,
mm-hmm.
and I was involved in it. So that's historic. Okay. However, my convoy is different. My convoy was inspired by that experience. The bridge was shut down. I was in the middle of the whole thing. So I can tell you that.
Right.
Okay. I wouldn't have had that experience had I not had a bunch of connections,
sure.
With friends, colleagues,
right,
in Texas or Mexico, right, to know about all this. And so, definitely has informed the book, number one. But number two, and this is what I want to say before we, get run out of time.
Right.
This book is, if you really get down to the heart of it, about especially the men, this is about a special type of men that are trying to be heroes, good men, if you wish, as activists, despite their faults,
sure.
All of them, Trotsky,
yeah.
With the exception of Tequila. Tequila is has no hope.
Right.
Tequila
right.
Cuervo has no hope. All he is interested in is just surviving and engaging in his vices. But Honoré and Trotsky and a number of the people associated with the convoy, some of the women, they're true believers.
Yeah,
they believe that it's possible to change this world.
Right.
And that is the real comedy and tragedy of this novel, mm-hmm. And this is partially based on my own experience. You get involved in that type of work, and you want to go and do something good for a community, and it's amazing who turns out to be your enemy.
Right.
Then you get into a world in which... now we have political enemies. Wow, I didn't know there was such a thing, And the very people that you're trying to form alliances with end up being your so-called political enemies, see? And so it's those contradictions that you get involved with that I was trying to portray.
Right. Well, I'm certain you're going to get a lot of feedback on this novel. We're talking to Carlos Nicolás Flores, author of Sex as a Political Condition. Carlos, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.